I am a sea of love. 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 You are a sea of love. You are a sea of love. We are a sea of love. We are a sea of love.
Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. Before we get started with today's episode, just wanted to share a few announcements for this late summer, fall of 2021. First of all, you may have been hearing me introduce myself as Sama Morningstar for quite some time, and I have recently made the decision to go back to using my birth name of Jessica and my married name of Huckabee. So you'll hear me introducing myself as Jessica from here on out. If you're curious about the reasons why I'm making that transition, you're welcome to reach out to me and I'd be happy to talk with you more about it. The other announcement that I want to make is that this episode that you're, well, that I'm creating a series of episodes for this fall, all about ancestral healing. And this, all of this is leading up to and sort of whetting our appetite for the month-long ancestral healing program that I will be hosting starting October 31st. And this program is part of the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship Program, but you can join just for the month-long ancestral healing portion. And in this program, I will be holding space for you to discover your connections with your ancestors and find healing connections. So a lot of people are concerned about connecting with their ancestors, especially the more wounded or difficult ancestry. And so it stops them from exploring ancestral healing. And in this program, we will explore ways to be able to access the wisdom and the healing parts of our ancestry and to help us liberate ourselves from the wounding patterns of the unhealthy and difficult aspects of our ancestry. So if this is of interest to you, go to wombcenteredhealing.com and look for the Ancestral Healing course. And all of these podcast episodes for the next month or so will be discussing various aspects of ancestral healing with the guests on the show. So looking forward to sharing that all with you. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hello, and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Jessica Huckabee, and I have Christy with me here today. Thank you so much, Christy, for joining us for the Ancestral Healing Podcast series. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and share a little bit about your ancestral healing journey.
Well, I'll start with my name. So my name's Christy Connect. I'm just a Midwest farm girl, I guess. I'm born and raised in Indiana, and I am the mother of four incredible kids and ages 15 to 22. So my people, I guess, when it comes to my connection with my land, the connection with my ancestors really goes back to just four generations here in the U.S. and then back to the Central European countries, Southern Germany, Northern Switzerland, Austria area. And you see my last name's Connect, and it's said Connect. It's actually it's a German and Swiss and Austrian name. It's one that I've felt very connected to, kind of strange, you know, pun not really intended, but it's been a very interesting life carrying that name. It's meant a lot to us and all of us actually in our family. I'm the oldest daughter of 9 children. Lots of big families back in this way. And, but yeah, so goodness. So my connection with all of it really started just a few years ago. And I probably should introduce that as, I think it's been a lifelong journey, but I think it culminated a few years ago into something that seemed, more, I guess, pointed, and I can pinpoint it to then. So I was trained as a forest therapy guide, and I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but it's something that that is fairly new in the U.S. Something that's been done in Japan for quite some time, and yes, and so I did this. It was kind of at the beginning of that whole movement, and it's all about understanding our relationship with the earth, connecting with land, connecting with people, healing, all kinds of healing work, and it's very individual. So what you'll notice in all of what I'm going to say is that when people work with me, when people work with other guides in this particular way, it's so much about what they need is what they get. And so I have a very small agenda, and it's basically just to hold their, you know, hold space for them and allow for whatever healing needs to happen. So all of my stories are, they're very different because they're all different kinds of people that I work with. And I think that's why it's also very interesting, because it doesn't get boring, I guess, because everyone's so different and everyone has such different relationships with themselves and with the people that came before and their families. So I could go on and on about my own people, but they're all farmers, you know. I just we all are, have that connection with the earth, and lots of beautiful stories there. So
I'm curious, particularly what drew you to explore healing in general, but then also your own ancestral healing, and what drew you to this topic from your own personal journey. You know, for me, I didn't have any awareness really of the importance of our ancestral lineage, besides the stories my grandma would tell about my, you know, immigrant great-grandmother, and like that was kind of interesting stories, but I wasn't aware of the importance that held until I was studying with Inez Hernandez at UC Davis Ethnic Studies in my Women's Studies department. Now it's called Gender Studies. And she talked about the importance of getting in touch with and learning about our ancestral roots so as to find our place in the world, and specifically to alleviate the tendency, especially of European ancestral folks, to appropriate spiritual traditions that are steeped in ancestral awareness because of an intrinsic hunger and starvation for that kind of connection that we feel when we don't track our own lineage. And then we see these traditions that do have an alive tradition, like mm-hmm. Native American traditions and African traditions of honoring the ancestors. And we feel the energy of that, and then end up perpetuating colonialist harm by appropriating those traditions because we're hungry for that connection. And so her teaching was find the connection through your own lineage in order to stop that pattern of harm with our our fellow human beings on this planet. And so that was what initiated my journey of ancestral connection and healing, because oftentimes we don't want to trace that ancestral lineage because of the pain that we discover.
Yes.
In that lineage. So I'm here, I'm seeing you nodding your head and saying, yes, yes, yes. So I really want to hear your story about how this became important for you.
Oh, goodness. Wait, everything you just said, I just think, I've preached that so many times, just how I find it so offensive when people just go and pick up a ritual and say it's mine now because I can do it. And I think, oh my goodness. Okay, so background, religiously, spiritually, I was raised Mormon, and Mormons are very intent on their lineage to understand where they come from. And oh, there's so much beauty in that knowledge of where I come from. And I remember the first day I landed, I got to go to Europe when I was a child. I'm a musician. And so I got in this choir and we did this beautiful 6-week tour of Europe. And I landed in Amsterdam, and the second I got into Germany, there was something that happened to me. I felt, when I stood on the ground, I cried. I was 13, and I got to Bavaria. We got to the Black Forest. We got to all these areas, and I did not know what was happening to me, but I felt a draw like I'd never felt anywhere else. Like, I'd been to lots of other places, and, you know, I guess stateside, right? But this place mattered. And then I went directly into speaking German in high school. I took my first German class and it all made sense in my mouth. You know, it's like, I tried to trill my R's like a Spanish person and like the Italian R. I don't know if you can do that, but I tried really hard for a couple of years in my diction classes and I can do it now, but it wasn't natural for me. But German, easy. It was just what my mouth was made to speak other than English. And so I really felt that was a big moment for me, those connective moments. And that has happened to me every time I've gone back since. Is like, this is where my body came from. Like, yes, it was built in the Wabash River watershed. Yes, that's when my mother was pregnant. But yet there is this other genetic connection to this space. And of course, the proof is all in the 23andMe and all of that now, but I knew it before that. I knew it because you feel it. But yes, and the ceremony and the ritual and all of those things I think about. Okay, so we don't know a lot about those tribes, and there are people there that I have friends that are there that are trying to rebuild and understand what those ceremonies and rituals looked like, and what the family looked like, what the communities looked like. And so I do stay in contact with them because I want to know what they're learning. I want to know what the Germanic tribes in Central Europe looked like and what they're doing. There's some things we know, right? There's some things we know. They use circles. Everybody used circles, whether it's trees or it's stones or whatever it was, using circles to worship or to, you know, do whatever ceremony they did. That was normal for them. Song and dance, absolutely normal. So there are things that we are not appropriating because they were just part of ours anyway, right? The language they spoke and all of those things, of course. You know, I don't have any Native American blood. So for me to go and do something like that feels inauthentic. Mm-hmm. I admire. There's this deep yearning. You're right. There's that deep yearning and ache for something that's so connected to the land that I live on right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have, right? So I also, to connect with that, I have a wild church. It's something that's very not, it's not even ecumenical, it's our faith, and people just come. And but I've reached out to the Miami because their headquarters is here, and to have them come and talk to us. It's not so that we can do what they do, it's so that we can understand what was done and see how that feels, because there's something about that understanding that when we feel it in our bodies and we have that aching and that yearning, that is a big motivating force. And you felt that yourself, you know, you felt that ache. I want to know what my people did. I want to know who my people were. And it's a very, very powerful journey to get to that point, and then what it looks like going forward. So So yeah, I know a lot about my lineage when it comes to, you know, where they came from and what their names were and all of those things. But mine really came through trauma. You know, yes, women's studies, yes, all those sorts of things. But mine really came through trauma and trying to understand where all of this came from and why I'm carrying it, because I am. And I never understood why it was that I was diagnosed with, you know, panic, what is it, general anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder at age of 12 in the hospital with ulcers and all these, I mean, all of it. I was a child. Why would I have all of this? And come to find out later in my life, there were stories. There were stories of things that my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, all of these stories that no one ever talked about. Mm-hmm. And lots of shame around these stories. And I decided that, you know, I'm the oldest of 9 children, and I'm the girl. And I think the girls are the ones that carry, typically, they're the ones that just shoulder that trauma and they carry it on to that next generation. I'm going to give it to my kids if I don't watch out. And so that was my big motivating force, was like, I'm not going to give shame to my kids. If they want shame, it's going to be their own shame. I'm not going to give that to them. Yes, I'm going to mess up a lot of other things. That's just part of being a mom. But having children for me was it. I knew that this was something that was not theirs. And it's not even mine, really. I mean, part of it might be mine, but I don't look back at my life and have any big shame around anything. So why am I shouldering that? And so diving into those stories, and they're mean and they're little nitty, just all the things that nobody wants to talk about. I have enough that I can put those together into something that makes sense. And then to work on those, to work on that shame and to the exposing of the shame and the exposing of the stories, whether it's just in my journals or it's in my writing and other places, or it's in small conversations, that is really, that's powerful work, and it's brave and it's scary, but it has to be done. You know, we have to find ways to communicate that.
So it sounds like some of the most potent practices for you on the ancestral healing journey, when we're talking about generational trauma that's been passed down in the form of feeling shame that doesn't seem to have a story from this lifetime, and I totally relate with this, is the practice of finding out the stories that are able to be spoken, but then also filling in the gaps of the unspoken stories. And this is something that I've worked with a lot, and I work with my writing practice, the writing from the womb practice that listeners have probably heard me talk about a lot, where we can access the information, the intuition, the imagination to fill in the gaps in the stories, because so much of that, particularly the shame piece, yeah, that gets passed down is because it's a big secret. Mm-hmm. What happened. And I know for myself, in my lineage, especially the women in my lineage, there was a lot of shame around sexuality, a lot of shame around pregnancy, around birth, around breastfeeding, even though it was supposed to be the whole purpose of a woman's life. There was still all this shame, especially if it looked, the woman's journey, like my mom's, looked different than the prescribed get married, then you have sex, then you have kids, and you stay with that same man, and your marriage is supposed, they're supposed to support you. If it looked any different than that, then there was a whole nother load of shame piled on top of it. That's actually quite erroneous. You know, it's claiming to be written in the Bible, but if you look back at the original texts, it was mistranslated to produce this shame around female sexuality, that is not even the original intention of the teachings that are in the Bible. So, learning some of that, right? Mm-hmm. Learning where the shame came from collectively, societally, mm-hmm. and learning the stories of our lineage, learning my mother's story, learning my grandmother's story, learning my great-grandmother's story around these themes that the shame is focused around, so that I can mm-hmm. recognize the flavor of that. When it mm-hmm. comes up in me, in my body, I can say, oh, hello, grandmother. Oh, hello, great grandmother. Can I hold this pain? How can I care for this pain that I'm still carrying? How can I release it? How can I release you from this pain and give it, you know, to the spirit realm where you reside now, so that you can have the support of, you know, one thing that I try to do is and do regularly is connect with the well of spirit ancestors prior to all that shame, or mm-hmm. who processed all that shame in one mm-hmm. way or another, who can then help support that release in me of mm-hmm. those patterns. And so just saying some of the things that I've explored as an invitation to invite to for you to share some of the ways that you've explored filling in the gaps of these stories, and then what you do with the stories once you this is where that comes from, now what?
Yeah, wonderful question. And you used a word in there that is absolutely fitting, and so that imagination. And so in my work, when I work with people one-on-one, or when I work in groups, oftentimes we do 3-hour sessions where we'll go out and we'll work in a natural space with a forest or a wetland or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But I'm wondering more and more all the time if it does matter, because when you think about it, with the water and the wetlands and the womb and you know, all of that, I'm just gonna do some experiments, and I'll let you know how it goes. Okay. But I have a story that I would love to share. It was about a person that I went on a walk with, and she gave me the whole story because it was so beautiful. I had to have the whole thing. But I sent them out just to do a wander. You know, we'd done it was a lot of meditative, contemplative, invitations already. You know, we'd gone through all the senses in a nature meditation, and then we'd walk together, and we'd shared stories, and all kinds of things, right? We'd been together for a couple of hours, and the very last invitation I sent them out to do was just a simple wander, just watching for something that catches their eye, and then be drawn to that thing. So walk until something catches your eye and walk toward it and spend some time there. And you know, there's nothing in particular that I'm asking them to do, right? It's just that one simple thing, and I have no idea what's going to happen. And of course, I've done this with myself too, many, many times. And so, and she came back to the circle, she had been crying, and it was, you know, it's a beautiful space, right? You're allowed to have those emotions. And so she said that she met her grandmother. Her grandmother had been out on the trail, but the grandmother was a tree that had fallen because her grandmother passed, right? And so all kinds of symbolism. So the story around it later, I found out, was that her grandmother had just recently passed, and she had fought really hard to stay alive. Like, she had been diagnosed with something that was going to take her imminent, like in days, and she stayed awake she stayed alive for weeks and weeks, and fought it, was semi-comatose for a very long time. And there was just this really big struggle that nobody really understood what was happening. They just watched her struggle and asked themselves, you know, why is it she doesn't want to pass? Why does she not want to go? The grandfather had passed before, and, you know, we just assumed, right? Everybody just assumed that it was supposed to happen anytime, right? She was ready to go and be with him, but there was something holding her back, and everybody was kind of wondering, right? Well, she said that when she met her grandmother on the trail and her grandmother was lying down, she noticed that the roots of the tree were splayed, kind of like a skirt, you know, like the skirt was up in the air. And she said, as she walked around the side of the tree and walked underneath where the roots were, she heard a voice that said, "Don't look under my skirt. Don't look under my skirt." And of course, she kind of giggles to herself, like, "What's that all about?" And she walks up around the tree trunk again and puts her hand on the trunk, and she hears the voice that she has a lot of shame around something that happened under her skirt. Sitting there, she remembered just snippets of a story, not the whole thing, that the first child that was born to them was an illegitimate child, that she had hid the pregnancy the entire 9 months, that there was so much anxiety and so much anger with her father, and all of these things, just all the little bits of the story all came together in that moment. And she realized that the fight that her grandmother had was that she was insecure and worried about what was going to be on the other side for her, that she had never really truly reconciled what that all meant for her, right? She wasn't, I guess she hadn't been super Christian when she was younger, but she had converted to a really very almost fundamentalist Christian faith. Mm-hmm. And so she had a lot of really scary beliefs, I guess, about what her choices had been when she was younger and hadn't reconciled them. And so anyway, it doesn't seem really profound. I mean, it doesn't all at the same time. It happens to many, many people, and many women feel a lot of shame around their sexuality, what you just said. But she could put that together in that story of her grandma's passing. Mm-hmm. Is the struggle was around the shame and the insecurity of not knowing. Mm-hmm. And so the words, "Don't look under my skirt," are basically just, "Don't expose me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be exposed. I don't talk about this. I don't want people to be under my skirt. I don't want this to be a public thing." So she then went home and did lots of journaling around it. And we met again and talked about it and how it really made a lot of difference for her to be able to see her grandmother as someone who deeply, deeply loved her, but had not reconciled, had not taken care of her own work and her shame around who she was and her womanhood. So that was my very first story, actually, around ancestral healing. And I felt like that was a beautiful beginning, I guess, for me.
Wow. So this was somebody that you were working with as a support person. Did that experience with her inspire you to explore some of your own ancestral stories that might have been calling you to explore, to discover, and to perhaps find a way to shift the energies that those stories might be, perpetuating inside of you and in your life?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, they do, because in those moments, you're hearing words come out of their mouth that are words that you've heard about yourself too, or you've heard about your mother has said, or your grandmother has said, or someone said somewhere around you, and you're like, "Oh, that's what they meant." You know, I remember, this is kind of a funny story, but it does demonstrate the shame around behavior. Mm-hmm. My mother and father were converts to Mormonism. They're fabulous people. My parents are. Yeah, they're amazing. But they did that in their 20s. And I remember sitting in the car with my mother when I was 16 years old, and I, you know, very hormonal, very, very normal 16-year-old girl, right? And I remember sitting in the car with her driving past the bank. I know exactly where we were and how she looked at me and said something like, "Well, we're really, really glad that you have all the knowledge that you have, and that you know what God expects you to be. And because, you know, when we were your age, your dad and I, we just didn't know everything that you know." And I remember thinking to myself, What are you talking about? And, you know, it was 30 years later that I'm sitting and going, Oh, she was saying that just because I know what's right or what's, you know, prescribed within this religious ideology, mm-hmm. I am going to be good. Mm. I'm going to behave. I'm going to follow the rules and be perfect and not going to shame myself or not going to carry more shame, not going to create more for myself. And in some ways, she's not wrong, mm-hmm. right? In some ways. But what she was telling me a bigger story than that. Mm. She was telling me the bigger story of, I have carried shame, mm. right? And in that moment, when I realized that, I just thought, oh, okay, mm-hmm. now I know. Now I understand what that was all about. I understand that I, as the oldest daughter, am carrying the shame around my mother's own sexuality. And there are better people on the earth than my parents, right? Mm-hmm. And that my mother carries shame around that, or carried at some point shame around that, is heartbreaking to me. So what can I do? Like, what can I do as a mother? What can I do just for myself, even, to make sure that that shame does not follow and that it's not perpetuated, it's not continued in the next generation? Those are the big questions that I hold for myself. And a lot of the work I do, I guess, I think about that a lot because I have three daughters.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the wisdoms that have come out of those questions? What things have you, what therapeutic healing have you done around that shame in order to liberate yourself and not pass that on to your daughters? Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you've explored around that, with that intention?
So my intentions around my own sexuality have shifted incredibly since that moment that I realized that, so much so that I'm no longer married. Mm. And that may seem violent, but it has everything to do with the fact that when we just do what we're told and we just follow the rules and we make all the, you know, check all the boxes, that doesn't mean we're actually in it. You know, we're not necessarily doing the authentic thing for ourselves. And to realize that was a very, very painful process, years of work to get to that point. And much of that time was very, very simple. Honestly, Jessica, it's really just spending time on the land. That means me with my hands in the dirt in my garden. That means me in my orchard picking apples. That is just me being along the ditch with my dog on a walk. There's nothing specific that I can say except for it's time with between me and the earth, not between me and other people. Mm-hmm. Yes, checking in with friends, checking with people, wise women who get it, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it is just me with the earth. And so the work that I do with other women is exactly the same. It's just very much, where are you called to be? Where does your body need to be? And lately, now that I think about it, right, I've been called to be in the wetlands a lot. We have a lot of wetlands here in Northern Indiana. So being there has been very, very easy. I drive 10 minutes and I can walk for hours in a wetland. Where does grief come up best? You know, maybe grief comes up best for me right now in a wetland area. Maybe I can understand my own propensity towards shame, you know, and I do struggle still. It is an everyday thing. I was talking to you earlier, like grief and gratitude, they're just right there all the time. It's an everyday practice. This is never done. And in a culture that we live in, we want things to be tied up, right? We want to put a bow on it and set it aside, but that's not the way it goes. It's never going to be that way. It's never over. And so what do? We create a life around it. We create a life that allows us to have space, even if it's just a few minutes, right? So I go to the grocery and then I swing by the wetland for a few minutes so I can sit and breathe for a little bit. And then I go home. Mm. Or I get something while I'm there and I bring it and I put it on my altar that's behind me, you know, something that represents that moment in time, so that when I see my altar every night, when I go to bed, when I get it up in the morning, it's there. And it reminds me that I'm allowed. I give myself permission in this space. This is mine. And so there are many, many things, and they're very, very simple. And so the profundity of all of them seems a little bit lost, but it's not, because you don't know what's going to arise. You don't know what's going to happen, what two pieces of the puzzle are going to be able to be put together in that moment that you're taking for yourself. And I guess I'm more of the everyday ceremony sort of person. You know, I want it to be an everyday thing. I don't want to wait until, you know, some man blesses, you know, the Eucharist on Sunday and I get a ceremony. Granted, I love all ceremonies, beautiful, and I respect it all, but I need mine every day, because that's where I live. I live every day, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to hold it. So.
Well, I just want to acknowledge and celebrate this. When I asked you about how are you tending to this tendency for us to pass on this shame to generations with your daughters, and you talked to me about what you're doing to care for yourself and the simplicity of that, of spending time in the marsh and spending time connecting with nature, listening to yourself, carving out space on a day-to-day basis amidst your busy life to have space to just be with yourself and listen and be present with whatever arises without any big agenda or fancy process or anything like that, just giving that space to yourself. And I just want to amplify that, because so often you also address that so often, you know, we're taught that it has to be an elaborate thing, that there has to be some kind of strategy or technique or process that's sanctioned or condoned by someone with a bunch of skills and, you know, certifications and, you know, ministerial whatever. And yet what we really need is that space for ourselves. And yes, we can consult with people who have wisdom that can support us. We can consult with friends and with each other. But ultimately, we just need that space to connect with the earth and our own inner wisdom. And that's such a powerful practice to be doing that for yourself and providing that example for your daughters. I just want to acknowledge and celebrate that, because so often as a womb-centered healing practitioner, I get asked the question of what can I get my daughters to do in order for them to have a different kind of experience than what I had. And what I often have to point back to is actually, what do you need to do to come to a place of healing, of well-being for yourself? And that's going to be more effective at giving your daughters more options by watching you as an example of what that means than trying to get them to do something you think would be good for them. So I just want to celebrate your wisdom and your understanding of that, and amplify that message for our listeners to remember that in parenting, that the demonstration way and leading by example and caring for, especially mothers, and certainly fathers too, all parents, we've been taught to sacrifice our own well-being for the well-being of the children, but that actually backfires. It does not serve the well-being of the children to sacrifice the well-being of the parents. In fact, it teaches the children to go ahead and continue doing that. And when our own well-being is not being tended to, then that pain is spilling out on the children despite our best intentions. So I just want to celebrate the wisdom of the marsh and of the forest that is guiding you to that. So beautiful. And, you know, I could talk with you another hour or whatever to hear more stories, but our time is winding down, and I'd like to, I'm sure there might be some listeners that might want to reach out to you and learn more about your work, and connect about, you know, this connection, this nature connection that's, nourishing this wisdom, nourishing the ancestral healing process for you. How might they get in touch with you?
So I'm at Christy, so C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, as you see my name right there, at wildcommunion.org. Wildcommunion.org is also my website name. So I can be, I'm there, and you can get me there. You can send me an email, or you can just sign up for some time slot. We can talk. And I would love to meet anyone like that is interested in this, just because it's it is such a beautiful challenge. Because everyone is so different and we come at it with such different backgrounds and needs. So it is, it's an honor. It's always an honor.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing the wisdom of your journey. And listeners, also know that if you would like to learn more about what's going on in the Womb-Centered Healing Temple, particularly the Ancestral Healing month-long online course that's coming up starting October 31st, you can go to wombcenteredhealing.com and look under the online courses tab and find the Ancestral Healing page to check that out. This whole series is sort of a little teaser, taster about what we might be exploring. And you know, I do have all these guests that are coming and sharing about that, their ancestral journey. And that's what I do in this course as well, is that those who come for the course, yes, I have frameworks or, you know, ways to encourage you, but ultimately it's about discovering your ancestral healing journey and what that means to you, what traditions you might discover in your lineage for your ancestral journey. And so, yeah, that's what I want to say about that. So I encourage you to reach out about that, listeners, if that's of interest to you. And yeah, that's all for now. Take good care. Until next time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.